All right, welcome to episode 11 here of On Tap. We've got a little bit of competition coming up here this week. We'll see how we shake out when it comes head-to-head with the podcast.
It's going to be tough.
But overall, again, surprised we've got this far. You know, I didn't know if we'd get past. We've tried numerous podcasts and little vignettes, but never really made it that far. So we've come a long ways in a short period of time.
Cool names, though.
What's that?
Oh, our previous endeavors had pretty cool names, I thought.
What was Skylar's? Was what?
Sweet Seat.
Sweet Seats.
Cool logo, yeah.
Yep.
Riding Shotgun we had.
Who made that logo?
I made the Sweet Seat logo.
That's nice. Really nice.
I think Riding Shotgun, we might have stole that logo.
Yeah, and then
we had Kid Talk with Leanne.
Kids, talk.
Come here. Come on. Get in closer. Listen to me now.
Oh, Gertie.
Yeah. Had to zoom out for Gertie to get in the frame.
So with that, going into today's episode, Brian and I always talk about what are we going to bring to the show and how are we going to go about business this episode. And today we're going to do a throwback theme and kind of take us back to the days of Myrtle Beach and how we got to this point, Brian and I, here at Florence Motor Speedway. But
all throwback week to it, darling. It's pretty fitting.
Yeah, I thought so.
Leave your heads at you.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you can't get no one to call in. You just start flailing.
It's like 11 episodes, we're already out.
Yeah,
we're done.
It's like drowning in the ocean. You're like, I can figure something out. I got to figure something out. Actually, I just watched Castaway the other day. And it's similar to that when Wilson goes floating away, and then you just start laying there. You just lay the paddle in the water, and then next thing you know.
The fact that one guy could just do that whole movie.
It's crazy.
I never want to tune away from it.
Tom Hanks is one of my all-time favorite actors just because all the things he's ever done really have been good, and it was kind of a dick move on his part to put his son in the acting career because he's asked him to go and try to be just as good as Tom Hanks.
Yep.
That's a tough one. So,
yeah, no doubt.
But with that, we'll get into all that stuff here shortly. I wanted to take the first half, just kind of recap the weekend for both of us, really. We had Southern National drove up. Myself, you, Teddy Bear, Owen, we drove up early Saturday morning, went to Southern National, had another good show. Had a couple cautions this time, right?
Did we? Not much.
The Charger race.
Race had maybe one or two.
Yeah.
The Mini Cups had a couple. They had their Virginia Mini Cup Association, that's a scary division itself.
Especially in a place like that. They had great car count.
And the guys are hauling ass, too.
They're just confined in there. Especially, like, it might be better if it was a child, but there's adults in there. There's you and I is strapped in those things, and I'm pretty sure they're bigger than the car is.
It looks like one.
So, anyways, love the Mini Cup. I love the passion that they have as racers. As a promoter, not a huge fan. I've seen too many dangerous wrecks that I don't want to take that chance personally.
Yeah, was it Carteret? That was a real bad one.
Carteret.
A couple years ago, I think it was now.
Yep.
It was pretty rough.
Paul was telling me there was one at South Boston as well. Mm. But because the problem with those is when they put on a race, they put on an amazing race. But the worst case scenario, or even on a, not even a worst case scenario, just a bad scenario is bad. Like real bad.
Yep.
So
at least like, I kind of resemble that to a go-kart. When you flip or something in a go-kart, you can fall out of it, and the cart can do what it wants to. Like the Mini Cups, you're so compacted in there, you can't really go anywhere, so you're just stuck into whole movements of everything.
I told you that. I drove a cart one time at Millbridge, long time ago, before Millbridge was even as cool as it is today. I drove a cart with a buddy of mine, and there was a guy coming off a four, flipped out of his car, and he hit a telephone pole. Not the cart. He hit a telephone pole. And I was out there, and I told myself, "I was like, this how you want to go? Is this what you consider fun?" So I was like, "Nah, I'm good on this cart stuff." And then that was just as a driver. Now look at me as a promoter. I'm still just as good when it comes
to the
karting stuff. But
Aladdin said it best.
Yeah, that's good. But anyways, so we had our weekend at Southern National. You know, we got a shortened season the way he's got it built, which is actually pretty cool. We just we can't pull that off the way we're designed.
Yeah, I wish some people would show it. I think we've said it about every episode. You know, we partnered up with Diaz this year with the URA sanction, and it's just an amazing facility. And a beautiful weather this past weekend. Granted, there was a lot of tracks racing around the area, but unfortunately, they had to cancel a few divisions. But hopefully, moving forward, people will just start showing up and supporting them. Because, yep. I mean, back to the point, it's not like you're going there and tearing up race cars.
No, right.
I mean, some of these tracks, as we've seen, and we're probably going to touch on it,
yep.
I mean, there's caution after caution. We're seeing, like, rear clips and front clips left and right. And we've had, between ourselves and Diaz, knock on wood, and I think we've had maybe, what, a handful of cautions
right.
all year long?
Yep.
So I just wish they would start supporting us.
Of course. Yeah, and it's tough with the scheduling of where people are and when they need to be somewhere. And, you know, with the car store was on, Caraway was racing. There was a couple other ones. I know Jacksonville was supposed to run or
Same scenario, I believe.
New River. So there was a bunch of different stuff going on. So we get it. But the car store wasn't too far away from Southern National with the Wake County race. And, you know, you and I were on our way home and we watched it on the phone on the dash. Kind of looked a lot like the end of the Xfinity race. Yeah. So coming to checkers wide open with the Xfinity stuff. And the problem they got, we talked about it with like these kids coming out of Legends. There's just so much, like there's no more just passing. It's all just knock each other out of the way. And then, you know, there was that one wreck with Laney. Not really sure why. I think it was Carson Haislip, what he was mad about.
Right.
You know, so these kids get out and it's easy to start screaming and hollering, but you're so used to the legend car world and how you handle business.
And granted, it's kind of to pick and choose whose side you're going to be on because obviously we see the end result of it. I mean, there's sort of could have been things brewing laps before.
Right, of course.
And they just happen to get an angle when the wreck happens. But still, nonetheless, I mean, it was still pretty early in the race, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
And I think their first race of the year, lap five, they tore up a bunch of cars, Jared said, and same old song against this one. But, yeah, just have some respect. Keselowski touched on, I think, today or yesterday, saying in Xfinity, at some point, the owners have to step in and say, you know, I'm going to park my own driver. Because, right. Like, NASCAR's going to allow it to happen. It makes for good coverage, like we talked about with the broadcast. But on, like, our level, I don't think the owners are going to step in and do that?
No.
It's all just a blank check. It's a crash clause.
Yeah.
I mean, it sucks to say that, but I mean, it keeps their doors open. So why would they?
Right. Of course. Yeah. The, so that race was interesting to say the least. I know there was, some stuff, but I think, end of day for me, you know, watching it and you and I talked about it a little bit is, with Landon and, you know, I'd call it the same way that, that they did, you know, I think, Danny did a good job sticking to what we've had out there. I know it might not be the most highlighted or it's the most
popular
respected,
opinion,
most popular
yeah.
opinion because there was two different ways you could look at that. But if you're going to do it one time, you have to do it the second time and you got to do it from here on
out.
You
got to stay consistent.
And I think they'll get to a point where you just keep doing that and all of a sudden you go to the rear. It's easy to say, like, when you poke your nose in there, oh, shoot, I know they're going to come down, and they start coming down. You're like, you want to stay, but if you stay, you know you're going to the back with them.
Yeah, you got to stay consistent with your calls, and it's that fine line you walk where, you know, them guys have respect. Them guys can also are back in the shop working on their own cars, where you have some people that's not working on the cars, but what you do for one, you have to do for all to be consistent with it.
Yeah, and we've said it a couple episodes ago about Will Burns that time and the Chris Throckmorton.
Yeah, he knew it.
You get to a point where you do it so many times, it's easy for these guys to say, oh, well, I know what's happening here. So then they go to the rear instead of getting frustrated. And I know.
I love the ones that just pull up. They're like right to the car in front of them or pull up to the like, oh, they're not going to see me. We're going to see you. We're not going to restart this race until you go to the back. If we told you to go to the back.
You can't see me.
Yeah, was it Cena or something?
But no, like I said, I know Landon and Ryan, and neither of them wanted to wreck or wreck each other.
No, even the post race video, I mean, they had a talk from what I could see, and maybe some people got it heated, but I don't think it got heated at all.
No, it looks
civil. I mean, they were just, you know, in the heat of the moment, but I mean, it looked civil, like you said, and I think it ended on good terms.
Yeah, no, like I said, they it is what it is. It's part of it, especially at a track like that. I mean, size wise, it's tiny compared to
another great facility, but the track is inviting for all that to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I mean, the one thing we say all the time is us not having backstretch walls gives at least an opportunity if you get wrecked to not hit something there. It feels like you can hit something at any time.
Yep. That's true.
So Car Store went off, had a chance today. They had some exciting news this afternoon about going on FS1 for the North Wilkesboro race. So
I wonder how many more clicks they got of that, would it be in April Fool's? Is this true? Wait, are they really doing that? Let me go back and look at it again.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty good marketing because it probably drove more coverage to it.
Yep. Yeah, so it's good for them. Yeah. Like I said, we want to shine a light on all short track racing, especially late model stock. So glad to see that things are still moving forward in the Cars Tour series. Like I said, we didn't have anyone to get on board for interviews today. I keep saying that it'll probably be our shortest one, but then it ends up being an hour and 17 minutes, no matter how I play this out. So
back to the car show. We can be some kind of a platform, and you know, we preach it to all of our drivers here week in, week out. Let's start racing with that respect. Let's have cars by the time they get to Wilkesboro and have people that want to go, not just get dumped again.
Yep. Yeah, be out of money or be out of car.
I mean, it's going to get frustrating for even the guys working in the shop, you know, 9 to 5 or sometimes the late hours at midnight hours. Right. It's got to get old.
Well, especially like even the Millingtons and really John and Justin. I mean, they're just, you know, little small teams that are trying to, like the Millingtons, they got a job they have to go to.
That's where like Landon, I'll back Landon because, you know, he comes from doing it himself. So I'm sure he's just not, oh, yeah, you know, I'm partnering with Carroll Speed Shop now. They'll do it all. I know he's in there day in, day out working with us.
So, like I said, we didn't have anybody to get in here. So, Brian and I, we talked about doing throwback. So, when we come back out of this break, Brian and I are going to give you guys a chance, you know, kind of took a chapter out of our next podcast that's coming up. When I watched back and I was editing their film, they spoke on how they got started and where they came from.
Look at it. Sorry, stealing content.
I am. I swear. Well, I just thought it was good because people, you know, never really realize all the ins and outs and the small things that you and I go through or have gone through since going on 2012 together. So 2012 all the way to 2025. And here we stand putting on a podcast. So I thought it'd be a good episode to take it back a little bit. And Brian and I just tell you guys where we came from and how we got here. So stay tuned. We appreciate you joining us here on Tap. All right, we're back on Tap here at Florence Motor Speedway as we get ready for April 5th, prelude to Darlington. But Darlington. Darlington is actually in town. Xfinity and Cup Series, their throwback weekend. Seen a few cool schemes, but I think you and I talked about it, that the throwback thing was really cool at the very beginning, and now it's like, so what else do we got?
Some of the
like,
cars are looking good. I think Josh is going to an Indy car.
Yeah.
He's going that route, which, again, some of the cars, I think Ryan's Blaney's going to his dad, Dave, which, I mean, I think that's a good aspect of it. What was it last year? And maybe they've done it a year or two before where there's a certain theme. Was it like short track last year or whatnot?
Right.
And some of them were following a protocol and some of them kind of did their own thing.
Yeah. But, yeah. Like I said, it was fun for a minute and it's still cool, but it doesn't have that luster it used to have.
Yeah.
You know, even the Cars Tour side, because back when that was the case, old Tommy Lemons, I believe he did like a Rusty Wallace Miller Lite scheme. And that was actually the first year after Terry passed away in 2017. We went to Hickory and did the helmet tall or helmet pass for Terry.
Yep.
And they had that, and the place was packed. And
it was, like, I think it was McCarty that did for, was it Four Peters? Or I could be wrong with the driver, but it was one of the Bailey schemes, which that ties in with this past weekend, Mini Tyrell winning. I don't know many really, really well, but I do know Brandon Butler, which is his crew chief, and he used to be the 29 Bailey's car, but the Bailey cigarettes used to be throughout the whole Southeast, so it's pretty cool to see Brandon get a win finally.
But now we're Seneca cigarettes fans.
Now we're Seneca. Yeah, yep. Tobaccoville.
But yeah, so anyways, with that being said, like I said, going into break, don't have anyone to really speak to today, but thought it'd be kind of cool to let Brian and I just talk about the roller coaster ride, if you will, of how we got to today. I mean, the beer drinking thing, that was before.
Yeah, but that's happened at birth. Almost.
Yeah. But as far as Brian and I and how we got to, did we just become best friends?
I think we knew that at the first interview.
Yeah.
You and Joseph Cunningham gave an interview for 2012 at Myrtle Beach Speedway.
Yep. 2012. So I always struggle with 2011, 2012 for some reason. I don't know what it is. But so I'll start on my end because you were already here. On my end, I did the driving experience stuff. I carried tires for a while. I was just in the Charlotte Concord area. I decided to help out at the NASCAR racing experience because at that time, my dad was looking. Richard Petty's stuff was kind of gone for us. We were we owned a transmission shop in Concord, and dad still wanted to go and do ride-alongs. So I said, hey, if it gets dad in a car, then I'll go help, you know, occasionally. I said, I do not want to be full-time. I was out of the driving experience world. And so I started doing part-time work with Bob and Chris at the driving experience. And then, like I said, around 2011, 2012.
But there was a piece of you that was still want to be in that area, right?
What's that?
Because you thought you had, maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, you thought you may have had to deal with the Rockwell Animation or Automation.
Oh, that was early.
But you wanted to be in that Mooresville, Charlotte racing area and never leave that.
Yeah, that was 2000. That was early. That was 2004.
That's Hennessy touched on before you started a restaurant and everything.
Oh, yeah. No, we don't. Actually, I just got a message from a buddy. My restaurant is now a bar, and he's at it. They sent me a video.
Why are we doing this here?
Yeah.
That's where we should be at.
they're at the restaurant I started, and it has been vacant for going on since 2012 at least. Before that, sometime, but yeah, no. Now it's like a local brewery. I'm like,
nice. We know where to go now.
Yeah, I'm going there for summer when I get to the summer shootout.
I can see you looking around. Still got the old.
I'm gonna be walking around the back, be like, is the cooler still back here?
Yeah, it's like an episode of How I Met Your Mother. Like they're still playing your mixtapes and whatnot.
Yeah, but yeah. So around 2011, 2012, Brad Knopfsinger called me and said, "Hey, Bob Lutz is interested in trying to." Actually, he got me in touch with Bob about going to Myrtle Beach because I had only talked to Chris. I'd really never met Bob at that time, but Brad kind of gave me the sign off to Bob for me to go to Myrtle Beach. And when I met Bob to start with, the conversation was, I'm buying Myrtle Beach Speedway. You go down there. You only have to do NASCAR racing experience. Your only job is daily NASCAR racing experience. Do nothing else.
That sounds great.
It sounded awesome.
Yeah.
And Chris and I actually have a running joke because he took me to Three Monkeys, which is my little local place in Harrisburg, and he talked to me about how like he painted the picture like why am I drawing a blank? What's my favorite little painter? The guy that does all the PBS.
Bob Ross.
Yeah, Bob Ross. He painted pretty little trees and pretty little clouds. He's like, you're gonna love it. It's gonna be awesome. And we were sitting there, and I'm drinking a beer. I'm like, this is awesome. I'm super excited.
Leaving you guys behind.
Yeah.
Out of here.
Then I got there and I slept at the damn racetrack for fucking 2 weeks. Oh, Jesus, there's a beep. Sorry. I slept at the racetrack for 2 weeks.
No, this is going to get animated.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to definitely say some words.
So I signed up for it, went to Myrtle Beach. Never knew Brian at that time. Get down there and Bob had recruited friends and family from New York.
Yep.
People he knew, which let's back up and just say that Bob's dad is a Hall of Fame promoter. Glenn Donley started the Dirt Series, mm-hmm. Which became World of Outlaw stuff. Like he had all his Weed Sport stuff with the concerts and had Guns N' Roses and Metallica back when in their prime. I mean, Glenn Donley did an amazing job in upstate New York promoting racing, promoting just stuff in general. And he's actually in the majority of Hall of Fames in that area for what he did. So Bob came from a lineage. Is that right?
Sounds good.
Yeah. I think it's lineage.
Let's put some Miriam Whipster here so we can
great promoters. So when we got down there, brought in all these guys, and he went to town. So like when we got there, it was gangbusters on, we're going to tear this down, and we're going to tear that down, and we're going to do this. And I walked in, and I was like, nope. I'm just driving experience, guys.
That's right.
No big deal. I'll just, if you guys need me, I'll be down there with the race cars. And that did not last very long because there was a couple people that came and decided that Masters was more important than actually getting the work done.
What's a big backer of the Speedway, though?
Who's that?
Masters.
Oh, yeah. Huge back. Actually,
relationship continued.
We'll get into that here in a minute. When we got there, the biggest problem we had was we decided to buy in, what was it, so April? Like early 2012, then have our first race like 2 months after that. And we wanted everything done in those 2 months.
Yep.
So we had to repaint the grandstands.
On a Thursday night.
Yeah.
Yes, it was a Thursday.
We had to repaint the grandstands, redo the suites, redo the concession stands. We literally painted, which Bob spent a ton of money just in paint to paint the grandstands.
The neighborhood behind those.
Oh, yeah.
Far too well.
So for those, Brian, actually, Jill Barnhill, if you're watching.
And Bobby's Appliances.
Oh, yeah.
Just that one particular truck.
That neighborhood behind us. So they would spray. We cover the grandstands.
Let me catch up with you. Obviously, my granddad owned a race car at Myrtle Beach Speedway and the whole area for, Jesus, forever. 50 years, I think it was. When I was the first one to give him a win in 2011. And I was always around it, of course, since birth. But I started driving 2010 at Myrtle Beach Speedway. That's the only place I drove at until later on. I ventured out to only one other track. But like Myrtle Beach Speedway was home, and I still consider it home, even though it's no longer there. So we got the word that Billy Hardy, Nick Lucas, and it was kind of on this downward spiral for quite some time. Their car counts were dwindling. We got to the point where divisions were getting canceled, and I even know I was going myself to like NASCAR Speed Park, Broadway to Beach, like printing out flyers on my other job, just trying to like get people to come, do whatever I could to keep the place going. And then Billy just started canceling the races. I mean, it would be 40% chance of rain on like a Tuesday or Wednesday, and then we're canceling this week.
Yeah.
So you knew it was like coming.
Yeah,
and unfortunately for us, we thought that was it. So then, yeah, when that, I remember it was racerap.com is where I first saw it. And everybody, I think it was like March or April. It probably was first of April where we saw it's been bought by Bob Lutz. And there was a group. The contractor guy, Ray something, I believe it was. Yeah. And then Marshall Biddle was the lawyer. He was involved. In there, yep. Andre Bauer was involved to some extent.
Yep.
So we saw that. And I mean, everybody that was racers in the Myrtle Beach, Conway, surrounding areas, like we were all excited.
Oh,
I remember Lucas and I was reaching, like going back and forth texting, so excited. And then when Lucas Williams and myself interviewed, it was with Steve. And I think Lucas interviewed with you and Joseph as well, right?
Yep.
So anyhow, long story short, we got hired. I mean, obviously, because we were around the area, we know the place good. Yep. We hit it off. Like I said, Steve and I was finishing each other's movie quotes.
Yep.
It wasn't even work-related. We just like, oh, we're going to get along pretty well. So luckily, we got the job, and Lucas was there, and that's the only person I knew to that point. And then, like, carry on. Like, there's a lot of New Yorkers, which Lucas and I are Southerners, but we know the facility. So that continue your story.
So every day we come in, and there was a different story to be had, and I'm going to forget all their names because I barely remember yesterday. But, I mean, there was times where we'd come in, and they wouldn't show up until, 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'd been doing stuff that they were supposed to be doing, and all of a sudden it snowballed into...
That was not racing experience.
It was not racing experience. Yeah. It turned into construction, then I became concession. I, at one point, had 2 business cards that had backside was concessions manager, and the other side was NASCAR racing experience. But anyway, so they quit. They were dragging their feet, just loving life out of New York, and got a chance to go see what Myrtle Beach. And that was back when really the strip clubs and golfing
was everything. It was Myrtle Beach.
Like since then, we've down to what the Masters and the Dollhouse, and then Lust Gentlemen's Club.
Lust,
but we used to have them like literally everywhere, corner.
Penthouse Club.
Same thing with golf courses. Pony. Golf courses have shut down a lot down there too.
They have.
Turned into neighborhoods because, God forbid, we need to build more
spoiler
houses.
Spoiler alert, this story ends with a neighborhood as well.
Yeah. So, it just got to a point where the construction, the timing was starting to run out where it was like, all right, we're going to have a race this day no matter what's happening. And then all of a sudden Bob threw in, we got to have Wheels of Destruction every Wednesday, and we got to have... We threw too many things into the pot at one time, and we didn't have the people that were willing to put the work in besides us. They kept coming in, and to the point where they were living in the hotel right behind the racetrack.
Microtel.
Yep. And I forget, that's why I was going with names. I can't remember the one guy that was stealing the quarters out of the washing machine, remember?
I remember one of the best workers just made one mistake, left a weed eater out one night and got fired.
Some dick. Like, his last name was... I remember that.
Well, I'm sure Bob called him a dick because of it, because he was fired like the very next morning. Like, Jesus, that was one of our best workers we had.
He was downstairs cooking, and literally during an event, and Bob told me, he goes, go fire him. I'm like, he's cooking right now. Yeah. He's like, I don't care, go fire him. Yeah. I was like, because he left? All right, fine. So I went down and told him, Greg Dick, and I went down and told him, I was like, hey, man, you've been fired. I got to take you upstairs. No, I said, you've been fired. He goes, can I just talk to him? He's like, I left it because I had to go over here and start cooking. I didn't have time. He goes, can I just talk to him? And he goes, and so he goes upstairs, and Bob's like, nope, don't care. You're fired.
Yep.
I'm like, well, now I'm cooking. So that was fun. So we got done. That was kind of just like the beginning was crazy because we kept trying to do stuff. And even at the beginning, the grandstands were still half covered. The place was half painted. Things were still technically in disarray, but you saw progress, which was good for the locals. The car counts were great because everyone got jacked about coming back. But the work day in and day out. Well, what was so Sherman, right? Wasn't his name?
Yep.
So we had a homeless guy used to live in a trailer. So as you came down into the infield on the right hand side, there was a trailer, and Sherman lived there.
Which Billy used to have a guy that would. That lived in that same trailer, which I will say, this guy would cut the whole field with a weed eater.
Yeah, he's Mexican, right?
He was a Mexican guy. Yep. I think they called him Paco. But, yep. I mean, every late night, like, he was the one locked up the gates, like, Billy and all would leave, and, like, we would leave, and I was helping Tommy Bird. We would just cut up with this guy all night long. I mean, it was a great time, but he would tell us the stories, and he would come, I mean, but, like, hanging out late nights with him, he would be out there just washed in sweat on race days. And there's a good friend of mine that used to help Tommy Bird as well, Lewis Dugan. We'd just be walking around in the pits, and he'd be like, becoming agua, agua. Like, poor guy's been out there to weed eater the whole time, cutting 48 acres.
I couldn't imagine. I didn't like mowing it. Yeah. Remember Doug?
Doug Irons.
Doug yeah. Irons. He older gentleman. He's like, I'll do whatever. Just let me mow the yard. And that parking lot was so rutted, it would hurt your body. And it would take a solid 2 days.
That should have been a Wheels of Destruction thrill show in itself.
Yeah, you'd be bouncing around and just getting beat up trying to mow the yard. But yeah, it was just a wild time at the beginning because we were trying to get a ton of stuff done while also doing the NASCAR racing experience.
Daily. Nightly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Back then we were doing nightly. We had hours.
Walk-ups and everything.
We'd get one ride-along at 8 o'clock at night, and we'd sit in the suites.
It was just so much off the top, and, I mean, I think Bob did a good job, though, I will say, of, like, weeding out who was there, and which you and I always talk about it, who was passionate about it, because, unfortunately, I will say, moving forward, like, yourself and me and even Lucas there the first year, and there was a couple others, Carlos and Max, like, we went above Mikey. We went above and beyond and was picking up slack where slack was.
Yeah.
So he kind of weeded those guys out. But unfortunately, that put too much of a responsibility on us moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah, it was getting...
I mean, the skid plates, think about that, just how long getting those ready, the night before.
We were there until, Max, remember, he slept underneath. They went and stole, so at the hotel, there was a pad against the window. He stole the pad to use it to lay under the car, and he fell asleep in the middle of welding, and then woke back up, and I was like, dude, go to sleep.
I think Lucas started a couple weeks before me, and he was trying to say, Carlos was good too. This is Carlos, and I was like, oh, hey, Max, I'm Brian, nice to meet you. No movement from Max. What the world? And Lucas like, Max, you alive down there? Nothing from Max. So I looked down there, and this was probably, I don't know, 8 a.m. Like, it was the very first day I started, and Max was already working on them skid plate cars from the night before. My man had tie straps looped around a dry shaft of one of the experienced cars with his hands inside of him.
To make it look
like
he's
sunglasses
working.
On, just sitting there.
Nice. Sound asleep.
Yeah.
Sound asleep. Yeah, but I will say that skid plate racing, probably out of all the things we did there, was probably the one thing we wish we could do here. But,
yeah, we definitely could say it was fun.
But no, it was a wild ride that first year, and it got to the point where at the end of the year, for me anyways, you know, is there anything in the center? It was kind of just
crazy. I mean, the first year, like you said, everybody was excited in their area because we thought that Myrtle Beach was going to be another debunked track going away. But the star power, I mean, I remember we brought in, the Michael Waltrips and Clint Boyers.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah, Mario came that one day. And it was another day. Mario came in the worst storm ever.
Oh, yeah.
Landed in a helicopter. And then lightning struck a telephone pole in the backstretch and crashed onto the racetrack. And I was in Milliken's trailer drinking a beer because I'm like, well, this is over. Yep. Like, we're not doing anything. And then Bob calls me and he's like, get that light pole off the track. We're going racing. I'm like, dude, what?
Yep.
So we had to go cut the wire. Brandon Elvis, one of our announcers, he helped dig some of that stuff up. But it was a wild, wild, wild ride year
that,
one.
That first year, yeah, it was just so much like boom right here in your face.
Yep.
And like we, you and I stressed out, like, how are we going to keep this going?
Yeah. Well, Bob came in guns blazing, and his ultimate goal was he thought NASCAR racing experience was going to be like the Skywheel, you know, or like the Broadways. He thought it was going to be an attraction, and that was really where his mind was financially to keep the place going, and it just never worked out
Which I will say, like, locational-wise, where the Speedway was, it probably did affect it when it comes to those regards, like of a daily occurrence, because the Skywheel, your Broadways, even at that point, the Pavilion Nostalgic Park, everything was beachside.
Yep.
So you had to cross over 17 to get there, where we were like before you even got to that point.
They always said that once you cross that swing bridge, you're not
getting
back.
Once
they're on the other side, they're not coming back. So it didn't quite work out, but we were doing thrill shows every Wednesday where we had to have a whole set of cars that Chris could jump into. Moreno was doing his jumps.
Tim Chitwood.
Chitwood was there for a while.
Clinton Esposito.
The
star power was there. I mean, these guys
that first
are
year,
all
I'm
amazing.
Telling you, we put the work in. And the first couple, the thrill shows were good, but once you did them week in and week out, then it was like, all right.
And it never changed up. It was just the same
Just jump into a car and Chris would be.
I mean, you saw like almost weekly the crowd dwindling down.
We needed a Tyler. So we had for
no,
those.
No, we didn't even say Tyler was there first year too.
Yeah, Sulpicus.
Honestly,
was there.
I will say probably the hardest worker we had.
Oh, for sure. Yeah,
I mean, Sulpicus. That guy was there before all of us, left after all of us, and I mean, he one thing can ever say that Tyler's going to get disgruntled, which he did get disgruntled, but he's always going to be there the very next day.
But Tyler went to Greenville and did a thrill show with Chris and fell off the car and got run over by the car trying to go through a firewall.
Yeah. And, I mean, not the best part about that because the whole thing was terrible in itself. But, like, Chris jumps out the Jeep and, like, clears the wood off the Jeep and Tyler's just laying down there.
Doesn't catch on fire.
Holding his knee and everything.
But, yeah, it was just day in and day out of, like, I mean, we were still trying to rebuild the place. We were still trying to put on shows. So it was paint this and where are we going to put this? And, you know, we had to build that tire building, which I don't think that came year one. But
oh, and well, Bob came. The first meeting was at the Palm School, right? Across the street.
Yeah, across the street.
When it now is the marble countertops and whatnot. And there was going to be a driver's lounge. There was going to be built.
Yeah. I was involved in that setup. You should have seen what it was supposed to be like. It was glorious.
Yeah. Everybody was looking around. What?
It was supposed to go from here? We were going to go from it was so Sebastian Couture was involved in this conversation, and we like drew it out. There was going to be a spot for all the cars, like a garage. There was going to be a spot for an ambulance. There was going to be a driver's lounge. It was going to be this big long building, and it was going to be beautiful.
Yep.
And but once Bob started messing around with the suites is when he realized this is a lot of money that I'm putting out and I'm not getting anything back.
Yep.
So I think he kind of checked out because he was going to knock the suites down. We were just repairing them for this year and then or for that year. And then we were going to shove them down and then put a whole another thing up. And then after year one, I was like, nah, never mind.
Yep.
So so we get to the end of year one. And I mean, really like the very end. And I was like, currently 43 years old, and I'm
and also year one did not, that was the year it kind of helped propel Anthony Anderson national championship, right?
Yes. Yeah. Remember he was going to get thrown out because Mike decided that he wanted to worry about the greenhouses that night, and I almost got my ass kicked because he did that.
That's right. Cause I was voting Chad to greenhouses, but I was still racing obviously. And like, yeah, we're going to,
that was a Milliken conversation. I mean, mine's good. So
it's black and white, son. Yeah. Come on.
So, but I had 40 people surrounding me. Anyways, that was a night. But
this episode might go hours.
Oh yeah, for sure. But it's a good conversation. You're gonna love all this.
Yeah.
So, anyways, we get done. I am like again. I'm getting older, and I'm figuring out my.
But back to what you were saying with Jill Barnhill, like a bow on 2012. All those things we had going on, all those things we're trying to accomplish. And then on top of it, I guess we didn't think about the beach wind and the ocean breeze is going to carry all this overspray from the grandstands to the neighborhood behind. And I think that's also like, really ticked off that neighborhood right off the get-go.
Yeah.
Because then it was constant complaints. And the racing experience, we did a good job of starting no earlier than 9 o'clock.
Right.
But it was just, I mean, every one of their cars was covered in overspray.
Yeah. How many cars did we clay bar?
It felt like every car in that neighborhood.
Yeah, everybody had to come over. And we, myself, Brian, and Max, we sat outside clay barring paint.
Lucas and Tyler, I could think of, too. You know, they were in there helping.
So, yeah, Jill's car was one of them that got covered in paint.
And it was a very weird deal with the clay bar. Like, you knew when you were good at it because, oh, it's rough, rough, rough. Oh, now it's smooth. Move on. But it was every inch of that car.
Yep. But before we go to break, we'll end 2012 where one of the last things I remember was that year was we had dug out, or actually the city had come and dug out the storm drain down the back, or like that that ditch that was down the back to try to help with the water flow. And they had cut into those trees back in the back right corner of turn two, like where the woods were and where we had the carnies. And so we had all those waste tires and I didn't want them to like be around. So I wanted to clean them up. So I was putting them down like in those woods, but I stacked them on top of themselves and I hit them. Well, come to find out, one of the neighbors got mad and was calling the news to come out and talk about how the tires got there. Well, Bob calls me and he's like, you got to go move them now. And I was back there covered in sweat, slinging tires. I was like, I'm done. I can't do it anymore. I had gotten down to almost like 160. You know, I was like, we were like burning the candle at both ends. Yep. And I was like, you know, my family at that time was still in North Carolina.
That's right.
So I lived by myself in Myrtle Beach with no family. You know, Jacqueline's by herself. You know, taking care of the kids and trying to get them to schools and do all their sports stuff, and I'm by myself, and then I'm getting, you know, kicked in the nuts for a whole lot of nothing down here. So I said, you know what, time out. I'm done. You know, I'm going back to North Carolina. So I quit in 2012, and then you know, we'll take kind of take that break from there, so we can refill us, and yep. then we can kind of come out of there because it only gets better.
Yeah.
So we had a great time. I'm not gonna.
Now you were 2012 was also, speaking of people that was not familiar with working at racetracks, I guess, the tunnel when they tried to swim through the tunnel.
Oh yeah, Tyler,
it was filled with water.
Dude, he lost his mind.
Tyler and Max.
So the tunnel used to fill up 9 feet full of water, and they yeah. did cannonballs into it, and they both tried to race each other across the tunnel to the other side, and halfway Tyler started bashing his head on the concrete.
The best part
ceiling.
Is I think it was you that spoke up, so make sure you guys go clock out if you haven't already yeah. before you yeah. attempt this.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, but they came back and Tyler's like, it was so dark in there. I couldn't.
And he says if Max wouldn't have grabbed him, he would have died right there. He yeah. would have drowned. Yeah. He said he went up and his like head was bouncing, he started panicking, and luckily like he just felt a hand pull him out, and it was Max.
Yeah. It was Jesus.
Yeah, maybe.
But we'll put an end on 2012 for now. That was the beginning, and like I said, it only gets better. So hope you guys enjoy this little kind of reminiscence of what Myrtle Beach Speedway was. All in fun. I think Brian and I look back on our time there, smile from ear to ear, you know, knowing that we were a part of it, but definitely had challenges throughout the whole process. So but anyways, we'll come back out of this break, and we'll talk a little bit more about Myrtle Beach Speedway and how we ended up here at Florence Motor Speedway. All right, we're back on tap. We just got done running you through 2012 at Myrtle Beach Speedway and the trials and tribulations of what that meant.
I mean, good car counts. Well,
always. Even really, all the
way
to
will
the
say
end.
Good car counts for the top divisions. Now, trucks, which we'll get into later on, we kind of brought that one back.
Yeah. Like I said, like you keep saying, we'll talk about that later on. This episode might be the longest.
It's fine. I'm sure people want to hear it.
Yep. So 2013 comes around.
We no longer have Lucas Williams.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It got to November, and we had all those tires out there, and it falls back on us to grade them. Yep. Even though we were racing there at the time, like, Hennessy was still present, and he was, like, over everything. I think Bill Beacon was the tire official, but Bill Beacon didn't come into days and grade them throughout the course of the week. And Lucas just looked at everything that was down there and said, we got to do what? I said, well, apparently we got to grade all these tires and, like, get them stacked and put those. Yeah, that about do it.
Yep.
And I thought he was joking. Like, that yeah, about just, do it? He literally walked off into the sunset.
Yep. He was like, I'm out of here. Forget you guys.
Text him next day. No reply. Like, a couple days later. No, he said, no, I quit. Jeez. Like, all right, cool. All right.
I guess we're doing
it. I guess there's that.
Because back then, like, when we had that shop in the middle that used to be the tech building, or was the tech building, really, there was times, man, we'd load that thing for the 400, like, top to bottom, side to side. There was, 1,500 tires we put in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, when we were done with the 400, because back then we were, I mean, they were doing 5-6 sets of tires.
It was Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday was a 4-day deal.
Yep. So we had thousands of tires afterwards to figure out if we could use any of them for scuffs, and then had to go through them, and then it started raining, and they were uncovered, and it was a mess. So Lucas did not make it. Nor did I. I bailed and said, F it, I'm out. And I went back to Charlotte with the kids. I actually started working at that time full-time with the driving experience because Chris asked me to stay on.
You were doing scheduling and all, right?
What's that?
Because you called me in like January. You were doing scheduling about getting hotel rooms and everybody, but that's when I went to Homestead to give rides and whatnot.
Yep. So I went back to Charlotte and then did the driving experience stuff. And then we moved Jerry Richardson.
Mm-hmm. Right? He was there year one.
Yep.
There was another guy too, like in the office I could think of. Hennessy was in the office. Wasn't Bob, was, Jerry, and there was one bigger guy. What was his name? But also we left out Brian Hamlin, which, by the way, Brian Hamlin worked his ass off.
Oh yeah, quality wise, as far as if we could have had him here to build.
Oh yeah, we had Brian Hamlin here now
to do the shit I've been doing. We wouldn't have missed angles like. Yep.
What was that big guy's name? He was always. I can't think of it.
You'll get it in a minute.
I can't find it. The hell with it.
But we used to love. And this is not a bad mouthing, but our favorite
Pat. Pat. It's Pat.
Oh yeah, yeah, he's actually doing. He works for Wake. Works for a college now. He does actually racing stuff. Yeah. He was the one that got us in touch with the Pelicans and all that.
Okay.
But anyways, But our Brian and I's favorite story, though, I guess it's technically years, a couple years after that, was old Bill coming in every day. Steven, Brian.
So the Red Lobster has a very good lunch special. I think I'm going to go get Red Lobster. I'll see you guys after a while. And like 3 hours later, Bill's back.
Yep. But Bill knew everything about that place. He knew where all the buttons were, where all the wires got run.
It was the old Indian burial ground.
Oh, yeah.
And fire ants there is the worst there ever is in the whole county. Which he wasn't wrong.
No.
It would bite your ass.
I got to the point, I was so comfortable with fire ants because I just would weed whack on that hill out in the front where those tires are now. And you just get eat up and you're like, oh, screw it. I'm just going to keep weed whacking. But yeah, no, so 2013 comes rolling around. I bailed. Brian stayed.
So 2013, Doug Irons, myself, Tyler.
Yep.
Mikey,
yep. Another good one. He was good.
Mikey was good. And his buddy was good too. Rob.
Yeah.
Rob had the maintenance schedule on point.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He'd had that place weed whacked. Yeah, he weed whacked.
Yeah, lawn maintenance.
Until the two of them wrecked their moped in the tunnel. But
yeah, that's a true story.
Tyler
was there. And I think that's all we had. And obviously Jerry took over.
Yeah, Jerry took over. And I was, Jerry didn't even know he was taking over. We were on a conference call and Bob announced him as the general manager of Myrtle Beach Speedway on a conference call. And Jerry called me afterwards and he's like, what just happened?
I do think that starts our very first car show adventure though. I don't think we had one in 2012 that I can recall.
What did he have? Oh, no.
Drop Jaw was what we had in 2013. But I think that's the first one we had. Like, this is before the Nopies and everything. Right. We embark on Drop Jaw in February 2013.
And remember, Drop Jaw was doing that adult version.
Yeah.
Remember, I forget what the name of that one was.
Well, it took one Drop Jaw for Jerry to say,
I'm out.
The hell with this.
Yeah, forget this. Yeah. He never got to see Nopies, which that got even weirder. But Drop Jaw was there when Bill and Nick and all them were there and Billy. But, Drop Jaw was one that was, like, crazy. Like, nice guy that ran it. I remember meeting him. But he had one, like I said, that was, like, all adult. And you'd have a car show, and you could wear nothing the entire time.
Mm.
Like, it was basically, like, strip club car show. And they had a whole magazine and everything. But then they shut down. And we didn't have car shows after that until Nopies. But, so Jerry got the call, and then Drop Jaw shut him down.
Hey, Jerry, drop out.
Yeah, so he bailed. And then Bob moved Howard Richardson into place.
Yeah.
And Brian's super excited to talk about this. Oh, yeah,
that's the best movie he probably could have made.
Yeah. So I was at home and obviously still concerned about Myrtle Beach Speedway. Put a lot of work in year one. Still interested in what was going on and, making sure that if we didn't just quit doing what we were doing.
I will say we brought on, which I think Howard did, because Howard's from the Myrtle Beach area as well. We did bring on a fellow racer, Steve Jones.
Yeah, and he was
pretty good.
But he's actually the tech guy now at Lakeview.
Yes. Yep. I mean, again, Steve Jones has been in the racing industry, around the Myrtle Beach and this whole region forever.
Yep. No, Steve was
He's actually drove some races for my granddad when Robert Powell just wouldn't show up one weekend. Yep. Steve Jones was there, and granddad said, hey, you want to go drive it? Because, I mean, we paid for everything. Just Robert decided not to show up. And Steve was good. Steve was like the mechanic on the NRE stuff. And I thought at the time I was also still NRE, but I kind of took over from what you were doing, like a little bit of anything and everything. And Howard just slowly brought in a family. I mean, all members of his family. And it just got to the point where, I mean, I just was busting my ass, like day in, day out, never home, and just trying to assume responsibility for everything. And then I did reach out to Bob at one point, and he's like, oh, well, how's the NRE going? I said, well, I mean, I guess it's going good. I mean, I'm definitely focused on that. I said, Steve's got the cars up. And I said, we're still doing that. Numbers are, I think, just as good as they were last year, if not a little better, maybe a little bit worse on certain days. He's like, well, maybe just I'll talk to Howard. So he called me back, said, just focus on NRE. So I just focused on NRE, and Howard was just, I mean, every day. Well, you're an NRE guy. I was like, sure, okay, well, good luck, clean the track.
Yep.
Come race day, track's filthy. And it's just like, I'm racing also at the same time. Right. So I don't have any, like, say-so in the racing, how it should be ran. But I know the conditions, and I know what we were doing year one. Just the work was not being put in behind the scenes. And it just, I mean, every instance just drove me nuts. And I think I was like, telling you all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, how's it going? Yep. Like, it's going like not worth a shit.
Yeah. Yeah. The one story that kind of end all be all for me was when he was on the front stretch and told one of the cars, get your piece of shit off of my racetrack.
Yeah. And then he told, yeah, this sucks. He told Sam Scarpelli and Eric Joyner, and I hate to call them out, but this is his worst to them, is you can't park up front. We have a lot of cars because you're not top running competitors.
Yeah.
And I've never seen Sam Scarpelli lose it, but he was irate that day.
Yeah.
And I mean, all rightfully so.
Yep.
I mean, he was sitting the flag stand too, over to, I forgot, oh, Tim Tolson.
Oh, he was like, over to Tim's side. He was always one to have an earbud in and be behind the flagger.
Yeah, I'm the guy like, here. Just everything runs around. Through me.
Yeah. Okay. But finally got to a point where Brian had texted and we'd talked enough. I finally walked into Bob. I was like, dude, like, I get it that it sucked last year, but, you know, I can't let this just go the way it's going. It sounds like it's just a downwards spiral. And Bob's like, all right, well, go in. And you only focus on helping. You're not in charge of anything. Again, you're not in charge of anything. You're just there. Howard's the guy. So I got there and met with Howard. Never met him in my life. When it was all said and done, I kept texting Bob. I was like, dude, this is bad. Yep. Like, I mean, because like you said, he had family members all over the place, and none of them knew what the hell they were doing.
Yep.
And then that one, what was the one mechanic that wanted to be a race car driver?
Ron, his cousin.
Yeah.
Or cousin or brother. They had one guy, Shannon, I think.
Yeah, he was terrible.
But he was the operations guy.
Yeah. So, but then what was kind of for me anyways was the thing that finished it off was, what was it? What was that trailer park show in Myrtle?
Oh, Myrtle Manor.
Myrtle Manor.
Which, that's you and I doing the races sequence. It wasn't, remember, the two women.
Yeah.
Remember, we had to tape over the lows. And yeah. But it was you and I doing it. So it was not reality TV at all.
Right, of course.
Like, they would show them, like, putting around. And then every time you see the actual race from the grandstands, I mean, they're up to speed, and it's Steve and I racing.
Yeah. But I called. So after I talked to Bob, and he said, go down there and do that, I called Brian. I was like, I'm coming, man. I'm coming back. I'm coming to help. And we got down there, and I was like, this is a mess. And so finally
it didn't take you long to pick right up where I was talking about.
Yeah. So finally, Bob had to make the decision to let go of him. And then
on
Brian,
Mustang Day.
Oh, yeah.
We had a Mustang Day, and we had a Wheels of Destruction after.
They wanted to fight me.
Yeah, and then I remember Bob coming. I was working concessions that day, and Bob came to me and said, can I just get a Mountain Dew? I was like, sure. I said, you look stressed out. He said, you called it. I said, oh, I know. Yeah. So I told you it was bad.
Yeah. I said, Howard wanted to fight me out in the parking lot.
Yep. That's right.
That was a wild ride trying to get back in and figure out. Again, I wanted to get out, and then all of a sudden I wasn't going to leave you hanging.
Just
so,
when I thought I'm out, yeah. They bring me back in.
So then we get back in, and then from there, now it's recouping the losses and the.
And guess what we're adding? We're adding an amphitheater.
Oh, yeah.
Soon after. Buck Cherry, first concert.
That was somewhat my fault. That blame can go on me because we were in Daytona. What was it? Was it that fast?
Yeah, because remember he was trying to turn us in for everything.
Oh,
tunnel.
That's right.
All that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So so we get rid of Howard. Then sort of would had to been rotating into 2000. So end of him because that Mustang day then would have been July.
Yep. And August is when the concert was.
But we met a guy. I met a guy, Ron Thering, owns a track in Canada,
Edmonton.
When we were down in Daytona, and he's looking for grandstands to better his place. Well, we had had our turn four or turn one grandstands that was doing nothing. It was beautiful grandstands.
I mean, as a fan, and I'm sure everybody that was used to go to the track back in the 90s on, that's where you sat. I mean, everybody's coming to you. You see the race off pit road. You can see the exit of two. I mean, you can see everything.
Yep.
Like, turn one was, I thought the best spot to sit.
Yeah, so, but Ron offered money to buy them,
mm-hmm.
Tear them down, and drive them to Canada, which actually, so I will say that one thing that's really cool is they're still up. So one piece of Myrtle Beach Speedway still exists.
Yeah, that's good.
It's just in Canada.
Unlike what I said today would be.
What's that?
The whole neighborhood. Remember, especially it exists. The walls will still be there.
Oh, yeah.
They lied.
The only thing that's left there is a pile of tires that they didn't.
Is not us.
Yeah, they didn't know where they were. But yeah, so he buys the grandstands, work it out, and then all of a sudden we decide to have a concert because Trip Cohen down at Boathouse.
And the guy from the little sound. Had to sound.
Chad.
Chad, yeah.
Yeah. So
it was like a partnership. It's a good concert.
Oh yeah. So Trip calls and he's like, "Man, I know you talked about trying to do a concert. I got Buck Cherry lined up, but they're gonna be here in like 2 weeks." And I was like, "I told Bob," and Bob's like, "Yep, let's do it."
Yep.
So I'm okay. So then Tyler and yourself and myself started building the stage,
yep.
Which the stage was just a floating deck.
like 40, so, 40 by 20, right? I think it was.
Yeah, it was big.
Roughly, yeah.
It was huge. So we built it. We were up until like two. Like Tyler fell asleep on the stage a couple times, and then
under the stage a few times.
Yeah. So then we were finishing the stage as Buck Cherry was pulling up to do sound check.
Yep.
And we literally just finishing it. And
I remember it was like 3, 4 a.m. Like, I mean, the sun may have been peeking up, so it might have been a little bit later. But if we only had a video of all of us jumping up and down, like, pretty sturdy.
Yeah, so this is good.
This is a good spot here. Yeah. Maybe they'll put the speakers there. Yeah. And then when we saw what they put on it, like, oh,
did you remember? Because the first person that brought a pallet jack or something on there fell into one of the gaps we had. Like, the plywood broke and it fell in. Let's just easy. Yeah. Let's not go over there. Yeah. And so they got all set up, and it was one of our best shows we had, because we had a bunch of good shows, like act wise. But Buck Cherry, you know, crowd wise, was one of our better shows. And Brian and I were in the back, because we had built like little bar areas, and Brian and I are in the back, and he's jumping up and down and having a good time. And
jump over here.
Tone it down. Quit the jumping. Let's just keep it.
Well, I will say, so the good part about doing that too is, like, and you know as well, and you knew it like previously to Myrtle Beach, is like them people are just normal people. Like the interactions that we were able to have, because they all did a racing experience, and we got to meet and greet all of them and give them like the inside scoop of what we did. And they did ride-alongs. They did the driving, and we coached them. But yeah, Josh Todd, the lead singer of Buck Cherry, I mean, he did the drive. And he's done that before, so I gave him a ride-along as well. And he said, what's those things over there? And it's the BMWs. So I took him around. We started drifting BMWs, and he was, like, just over there jumping up and down the seat. And I said, man, pretty fun. He said, oh, yeah, man. He said, I ain't going to do a line tonight. He said, I'm good. I was like, oh, cool. So I know what you're getting at. All right. I'm glad I did it for you. Yeah. So now I saw him jumping up and down the stage. I said, yeah, I'm sure he still did a line.
Yeah. Which, to what you said about car count and like Southern National getting people to support it, I like that little concert venue didn't get the recognition it should have, because I mean the acts we had, we never got the people, because so when year one was done, 2012, which we talked about, 2013 comes around, Bob went back to Charlotte, like for him to focus on his businesses and like the ones that are actually making money. And he said, you guys worry about it when it was all said and done. And when we got to the point where we started building the concert stuff, you know, he went head first and got the best of the best. And we got the fair, which was a whole process. That was a thing.
That was later on. Fair was 15, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
I think so.
I don't know. Numbers are
it's a lot of work. But I mean, but also like racing within the quick year 2013, racing is already dwindling down again.
Yeah.
But it could play in a little bit with Howard, like how he was running the show, which I will say it was bad.
Right.
As a racer and also as an employee working there, and I had really had no say so, unfortunately. But it got really bad. Because I remember the concerts, like we were practically saying, like, here's a free ticket.
Right.
Come to the race, see what we got going on.
Right.
Because we thought, and I think this is a mentality that everybody should have. Once you get them in the gate, you got them.
Yeah.
Let your show sell them on coming back. They're going to buy concessions. They're going to buy something. And we tried every outlet we possibly could to get people back in, because 2013, within a short year, we saw the car counts elevated from where they were before Billy sold it. And it got back quick.
Yep. Yeah. So I had Buck Cherry. And then I guess we'll kind of move forward from there as we move along year-wise. So 2013 was kind of crazy. The Howard part was probably the biggest part of that year, right?
Yeah.
Buck Cherry was a crazy time getting that done, but it ended up being good. And then we made a relationship with the Boathouse folks.
Yeah, I think the only other one, we didn't have much. Maybe Chase Rice. And
no, Chase was when we had the roof, and that wasn't that year.
Right? Oh, okay, it was later on.
Yeah, that was
We called that perfect time.
Yeah.
More so Old Dominion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because that was still like that was 14-ish. Because Howard still was a problem then. Because he called in and like stopped the building of it. We already had the stage built. But we're gonna take another short break and come back. And we got a long ways to go. It's only 2014.
Maybe we can take next week off.
Yeah. This is episode 11 and 12. So stay tuned. We'll be right back on tap. All right. Welcome back. 2014 just happened.
13
happened. 14, we just talked about, 14 was kind of in flux. There wasn't really much that went down in 14. Finally got comfortable.
Well, I hate to say, like, it's fucking, beep again.
Got it.
Like, it's Macho Man and Hulk Hogan, but it's like the mega powers are back together. Yeah. Finally, yes.
So we had to clean up.
Voice was heard, we're back together.
We had to clean up Howard's stuff. 14 kind of just became like a normal, you know, consistent year. And then during 14, though, we were thinking of what can we do better? What can we do more? Go to Daytona for our normal NASCAR meetings. 2015, had called around. Actually, let's back up. Got a phone call. I was in my garage in Harrisburg. And got a phone call from a guy named Mark Myers. And no idea what a Nopey was. Never even heard of it. It was, you know.
And it still stands. I know the P stands for parts.
Yes. What is it?
National Organization of Parts.
No, it was.
Something parts.
Yeah. I used to know it, but I can't remember it now. But they would do. They started. They were part of. Yeah.
It did turn on.
It did turn
on.
We
could figure it out. Oh, well.
But they were part of Fast and the Furious. They were all about their low riders. They would go to Atlanta and pack the place.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, they'd have Ludacris was there doing concerts. Yeah. Like, I mean, it was a big deal. Well, then things kind of just shut down after Fast and the Furious wasn't as exciting. And then they were looking for places to go. And they called us or called me. And I ended up talking to them. And I worked a deal out. And I was like, man, it's fine. You know, we could always use something. Well, we did not know what that meant. That thing turned into a just absolute blockbuster as far as event. They wanted to come in and do their old school show. Well, it turned into a truck show, you know, with the squatter stuff. Which
the Ainer crowd, Gallivant's Ferry, Conway crowd, they were
Brian
just
and I, not a
begging
huge
and looking for something to go showcase what they had.
Moneymaker is a racetrack. Event as far as like having a deal.
We just always call it like the ultimate tailgate weekend.
Yeah.
What did you get from it? You just tailgated just all weekend long.
Yeah, I never understood it personally, but we got to negotiating with Mark in 2014. You know, at that time back then it was, you know, we'll do 80-20 or no, what did we do the first
time?
It
was like the first X amount went to them.
Right.
And then it went to us and then it splitted.
Yeah.
Yeah, it split.
So learning how that all worked, and then Mark ended up passing away a couple years later during it, like before an event. Yep. Then his brother passed away. Then it ended up just kind of being our show.
Yep.
With Sting or
his dad he's still around.
No, he's still around.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I met the group. There's a new group running the Nopey name. I met them when we were at PRI. But yeah, so 2014 was kind of Nopey's build, which I'm sure we'll get into. Brian and I have decided this most likely is going to be a part one, part two episode.
But 14, Nopey kind of fell into our lap, but I will say, like, that year, I remember we kind of focused more on the weekly racing because we were getting so much going on at one time, and literally 2012 was everything. 2013, we kind of got through a curveball with the Richardson family, pun intended.
Yeah.
But yeah, 2014, we said, all right, car counts are dwindling. Like, we're racers at heart.
Right.
We got to bring this back. And I think we put more of that on the front burner than anything else. And then Nopey fell into our lap. But still, racing started building back, which was a good thing.
Yep. Yeah, so we got car count back. And then had our 400 as always. And then went to Daytona. I had reached out to a few people like Jody Conklin, who does fair stuff all over the place. And I started thinking about all the fairs I've been to and the fact that there's nothing in that area. I mean, there was Ferris Wheels and there was, amusement parks, but there was no county fair. And so I reached out to Jody Conklin. He got me in touch with John Straits, with Straits Amusements. Talked to him quite a bit. And then also back then got in touch with Steve Farmer with UNOH and tried to figure out how to make the 400 bigger than life. You know, it was always a big event.
Yeah, because years leading up, they were doing the race on the back straightaway at
Daytona.
Yep. And it was the UNOH Battle of the Beach.
Yep.
It was a good thing. I thought everybody tuned in. It was like midweek race.
Weird track, but it was very weird the way it worked out.
Well, did Larson won it driving for Lee McCall, who still runs with us, I think, in the 98. He used up CE Fault pretty hard one time. But yeah, it just went away.
Yep.
I don't know, the viewership wasn't there, but everybody like tuned in. It was a weekday race. So we thought, like, let's go after UNOH. Maybe there's something there.
Yep. And Brian and I, no different than we'll get into, I'm sure we've talked about it, Battle at the Beach, all came from drinking beer.
That's right. It was a perfect outlet, though, with UNOH, with Palm Charter High School right across the street. Like, what more are you trying to attract? Like, we have a motorsport school right across the street. and UNOH is the next level that a high school would go to. Like, why wouldn't?
Yep. So we go to Daytona. We had meetings set up with Steve and Dr. Jarvis, the president of UNOH. Had meetings set up with them. Had a plan to go over to Orlando because Straits was in doing a fair over there. So we met John at a Starbucks.
Yep. I will say Osceola. Osceola concert. Osceola, that's what it was. And I will say, side note, like the greatest part of that weekend for me, that's when we also I met with Chitwood. I mean, not Chitwood, Marina. Because when you were over there talking with Jarvis and Farmer, I remember Double A Roadshow, Anthony Anders was telling me about how he has one division that we're going to race for fourth place.
Oh, yeah.
Not a bad idea. Yeah. Because he's like, is everybody going to like check up first through third? Yeah. Like fourth place is the winner? He's like, yeah. He said, I'm just like, there's three cars that we've been battling and that they're like, far beyond better than everybody else. And he said, fourth, fifth, sixth. Hey, that's always a good battle. I think I'm going to like just randomly say fourth place is going to be the winner.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He also got a sunburn that year on his forehead.
He did.
But we got to meet with Steve and Farmer and Dr. Jarvis agreed to do our battle at the beach idea for the 400. So we turned, and it was a huge deal. Like we were super excited. They put a bunch of money into it. And again,
53-foot trailer out front. Driver's meeting was out front.
And again, I'm not trying to talk bad about anybody, but the person in charge was too worried about making the money instead of focusing on the future goals.
You're talking about awesome money.
Yeah. And so we worked our tails off to get something that lasted a whole year because we were focused on accepting cash and calling it a sponsorship instead of thinking about what it took to make that bigger and better every year.
I think we battled that same thing at the fair. With soda.
With what?
Soda, Pepsi.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The food vendors.
Yep. So, but anyways, we brought that. That's the fun part of what we're doing now is that we don't have it right now, but Brian and I know what the end all be all goals are.
We see the vision.
Yes.
Yep.
It's not about just taking in the cash and be like, oh, a sponsor gave me money, now it's ours. Yep. It's how can we make the event bigger? And because on Brian and I's end, if we can get in a sponsorship dollar and we give it right back out to it, to the racers, at the end of the day, they're going to come and spend that money and we're going to get it back on the other side.
Yeah, so, we touched on it last episode. Like some people might look at the end result, like this is where we're going to get to. And I said, like, this is all we got. Like we're looking at this for the end and beyond.
Right.
Like we're not just trying to, like, say, tapping out, we're done with it at this particular time.
So, so unfortunately, as exciting as it was, we went to and did like a pre-race thing at what was the bar, the Crown Reef.
Yeah, that's right.
We did the lounge that they had. So we did like a pre-race deal, had the whole kit and caboodle, and it just it was a flop, unfortunately. And I hate it for UNOH because you know I kind of sold it as it was going to be this big thing.
Yeah.
And for them, it was
like I said. I mean, we tried everything to drive people there. Like the driver's meeting was out front. Everybody had to come out, go to the trailer,
right? Yep. But unfortunately for them, it was a flop, and it didn't grab the legs.
That's also the first year Tacoma Unwind. That is that one?
I can't remember.
It was close.
At this point, we're doing numbers. I can't even process.
But remember, we wanted Modifies to be a part of it.
Yeah,
they also were at the Battle of the Beach.
Right.
Yeah.
It probably was.
I think it was.
Yeah. Yep. But so, yeah, like unfortunately, that deal ended. But while we were in Daytona that same time, we got Straits. Mm-hmm. We got the fair lined up. And in 2000 and what did we say, 16?
Because it was a year worth of headaches for you.
Oh, so. 15 was crazy. So people don't realize.
What Myrtle Beach City and limits and everything.
I went through county commissioners, county lawyers, because they are dead set that to have an event, it has to be only 7 days. It cannot be consecutive because of bike week. It's all about bike week. Everything they did was all about bike week. And I'm like, you know, we have to have 10 days because in a fair, if you have a rain out, because their money comes Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the days, they're already there, so they're going to just be there.
But you want 2 weekends of that.
But you need 2 weekends. Yep. And if one fails, they need the other one. So you have to have 10 days. And I try to explain that to all the people in the county and all the commissioners and all that stuff. And it finally, they ended up writing a law on our behalf that, strangely, I kept going to zoning. That always got me kind of a little thrown off is that when it was all said and done, I went from this person to this person to this person to this person to this person. And then when it was said and done, I had to go and I'd go to zoning. So I'd be in line with people going, well, I'd like to get my pool put in, but my pool is overlapping this. And then they're like, hey, so what do you got? I'm like, I'm trying to have a fair.
Yeah, but wasn't, like, I think your biggest battle, and I could be wrong here, in the county, grandfathered into fairgrounds were in Loras.
Yeah, right, correct.
Yep.
So it was, but anyways, it was a very hard process to put together, and we got it. And then in 2016, we had our first fair. So, not really sure where this is going to end, because we're kind of just going
by the way, the pools, year. I mean, that's another event we had.
The pools and spas, yeah.
Twice a year.
So, we're going to take another break, because I got to pee. And we'll come back, because again, I really feel like this might go farther than we thought.
Well, we're getting to 17. I had a pretty good year as far as the drivers.
Yeah. So, and then we got things to talk about.
16. And then it starts going. I mean, divisions go up. Oh, like so, Myrtle Beach Speedway Racing reaches its peak.
Yeah.
You're like, what is going on here?
So that's actually, we're in the prime. This is a roller coaster ride of, like, we started off at the beginning.
But we're showcasing how we never gave up.
No, never quit.
We were always working behind the scenes to make that place the best it possibly could be.
And then, until we started going to Buffalo Wild Wings at the end. But we were going uphill and then all of a sudden downhill and then back uphill. So the roller coaster ride you guys are on board for. Hopefully you got your hands up in the air, because I'm telling you, it's not done yet. It's going to get wilder. So we appreciate you joining us, and we'll see you on the other side of On Tap. Welcome back to On Tap, an episode that didn't start off this way. I didn't think we had envisioned that
We started happy. Like, we're doing another episode. We're talking about our throwback week, but now we're starting to get angrier as it proceeds. Yeah.
So it's the mood is going with the conversation, and then it'll end up back where we are, and we'll be happy again here in a minute. Yeah. But
like you said, a roller coaster, highs and lows.
Yeah, it was definitely ebbs and flows. I always like that one.
Ebbs and flows are good. It's more business related, which is what's business.
Yeah. But so 2016 rolls around. First fair comes up.
Racing's still going.
Actually, did we do racing that year during the fair or the next year? Because we tried to have, like, racing during the fair.
I think we...
And it sucked.
Well, that was the first... So 2016 is the first year.
Yeah.
We had the... I know what we had. We had the motorcycles, AMA.
Oh, yeah, that was...
With the hay.
Yeah, that was terrible.
That I bitched and complained about. I said, I'm going to be cleaning this hay all year long.
Yeah, that was an awful idea. I actually sat next to Bob in the grandstands. I said, "Hope you," because there was literally no one else in the grandstands. I said, "Hope you're enjoying this."
Yeah.
Because he paid for it, and no one was there.
Yeah.
So
we did have some concerts. So.
But I will say that, like, when you were doing the fair, like, building up, like, John and his team with Straits Amusements, they have an opinion or an idea of how all the fairs usually go.
And so should probably listen to them, because they've done it before.
Yeah. So they had, like, all the things, like, you know, have this this special this day and that special that day, and you know, the events that you would have, and
$2 wristbands, everything.
So but the one thing he said was have concerts, and at that time we had the concert stage, and then Bob ended up buying
we got to touch on how the fair bout did not happen. Like, we briefly said it earlier, but the whole Pepsi and the soda vendors, the food vendors, like, you cannot, no, you had to buy your drinks from us. It got really weird there in the office. Like, your buddy Craig, which came back with you in 2014 or 13. I remember sitting there at my little desk. Like,
they all wanted to bail, and we were fighting over pennies.
Essentially, like, that's what it was.
Like, it was all pennies, and we were battling over it. And it was like, all right, this is the, like, especially all, like, I won't dive into it, but I'll tell you right now, the effort to get the license to have the fair was daunting. Like, it was stressful. It was a process.
And what we had previously is bringing no crowd attendance.
Yeah.
So why would you not want to drive some support to the track?
And all we care about is getting a couple extra dollars by selling soda. So whatever. Anyways.
Nickel and diamond. That's what it's all about.
Right. So so that first year, 2016, comes up. Want to have concerts. And, again, Bob got super excited about concerts.
Well, we had to reach out. Remember, we know music industry, so let's kind of put our fillers out.
But his we did. But his dad for sure 100% was amazing at getting acts. Back in his day, like I said, he got Guns N' Roses at a time when they were at their peak. He got Metallica, like Weed Sport. I think the saying was, if it's rocking in Weed Sport. But he knew the business.
Yeah.
He understood the concerts and the business side of music. Bob was kind of just taking a little bit off of that, you know, hoping that maybe he knew some of it and made his phone calls, talked to the people. But end of day, like the acts, like out loud, they sound great. You know, like for us, we had Mike Posner, which, by the way, put on the best
sound check.
Yeah. I mean, the music that Mike Posner, if anyone is out there and has never heard Mike Posner sing, please listen to him.
Yeah, we couldn't even work. It's like an angel was singing. Yeah. Like, what is that coming from over there?
So he actually, his dad passed away and he got weird.
He
went across country and got bit by a snake. And while he got bit by a snake, like almost got killed because of the snake. But yeah, sound check wise, he was amazing. And then so we had Mike Posner, we had Trace Adkins, Montgomery Gentry,
and Huey Lewis in the News.
First year.
Yep.
And then we had some weird dude, Nash Greer.
Nash Greer.
Yeah.
That was Bob's daughter.
Yeah. Needed to have Nash Greer. Yep. So,
but if you add all those up, which kind of made me a little bit upset and saying, okay, I'm an employee. That's my role here. It's 110, 70, 60.
Doubled your 90. Salary, tripled your salary.
Yeah, but where it was, like the cost to get all those guys. Pearl Jam was in Columbia, I remember, at the Colonial Life Arena. And I said, hey, Pearl Jam's like, it'd probably do a pass through, which at the time, what is that? That means nothing. They'll never come. Three doors down later on helped us out with a pass through. It was super cheap. Pearl Jam was willing to do it like for a quarter of their cost of what they normally did. No. Well, you give me that money, then we'll get Pearl Jam.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I don't have that money, so I guess I'm not going to give you that. I guess I'm not getting Pearl Jam. But looking back at it, you probably could have made that and more.
One show of Pearl Jam.
Especially seeing the crowd attendance from all the concerts we had.
So this guy, Josh, that does he did Bob's IT stuff. He got me in touch with a guy that's friends with Eric Church. And I had Church for $40,000. And Bob told me, he goes, I don't even know who Eric Church is.
Will Hogue, five.
Will Hogue for five. Yeah. Look at Will Hogue now. Yeah. Now, I will say that we did have our swing and misses. We got one shot at it.
Old Dominion was $500.
That wasn't even us. Oh, I was saying my swing and miss.
That
was
you.
Yeah,
Magpie salute. That was you.
That was my fault. But I will say, like, in that corner, you couldn't hear them. I was surprised, like, as loud as the speakers
with
were.
With no sound barrier or anything.
Out in the fair, you couldn't hear them. So no one knew to come up and to listen to it. So, you know, it was definitely hard.
I mean, the Midway had its own energy, which John Straits told us it would.
Right.
He said, I'll be surprised if people go over there. He said, that's great to have it. He said, because you want to drive people over there and they come back through our Midway again to leave. But we were, again, but we should take John Straits' word. Yep. He's done it before.
Right. Yeah, so that was tough. But then we left. So the first fair, though, overall was great. You know, as far as, like, financially, it was huge. I mean, we lost our ass on the concert side.
Well, I think he nickeled and dimed to Pepsi, but once he saw the very first night, the money that I counted and gave to him, he was like, okay, fair's not a bad idea.
Yeah, it's not a terrible idea. Yeah. So we definitely challenges, though, because I'll never forget, man, I don't know how many miles I ran to go up and down because once we started exiting, which that road now that's there pisses me off. What is that road that goes past Circle K, goes around now?
Waccamaw Pines?
Over to Carolina Forest?
Yeah, they extended it, yeah.
Yeah, so back then, when everyone started to exit, I had a fucking direct track. Yeah, we have a lot of...
yeah, because, I mean, Tanger gave us the smallest parking lot they have. But we were all overflow parking.
Right.
And they gave us, oh, yeah, you can park here. What's 20 vehicles going to do for us?
Yeah.
Come on now.
Yeah. So, but I had to go out there and wave traffic, and then I'd go, like, whisper to the people because that damn red light at 501 was the longest red light to turn left.
I will say still is.
Yeah. So I'm out there, and I'm, like, whispering. I'm like, hey, it's fine. If you just go right and go through Tanger and then cut out at Outback. But now they got a damn right lane that we can go all the way out. But we never had that at that time. So every night was traffic because you'd always get the group that came in, then you'd have a group that would exit at the same time.
But we're probably the only track that ever escorted you leaving a facility. I've never been to one race event or any big event. They're all like, oh, come here, park here when you're coming.
Yeah.
When you're leaving, good luck.
Godspeed. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, so it was all of the logistics of a fair. Because we took up, which I was surprised how big the fair was, but also how much real estate they took up. So, like, when we were done, it would go from the end of the grandstands, like, in turn four to the turn one side over there by that pole. But really, like, it felt way bigger than that.
It did. Especially walking through. I mean, we walked, what, 30-something miles a day?
Yeah. And then we had to park everybody over there in that, we call it the soccer field, but over in the corner. And then we started doing overflow in the infield at some point. But then you had to figure out who was going to sell tickets and where they're going to go. So, yeah, definitely year one was a challenge when it came to the fair. And then at that time, the fair was going good, and then Nopey's was going real good.
I'll say, like, back to the fair, like, I was always like, why is the infield overflow parking? That's more so primary parking. I didn't go there. Come late because you get to park in the infield and walk right to it.
Right. Yeah. So, but the fair was cool. We had a good time. So, you had your roller coaster rides of, so what was that, the game that they had where that guy talked shit the whole time? Where they threw the ball at him, the where he'd fall into the water, like the,
oh, like a dunk tank.
Yeah. But remember the guy that talked shit to everyone? Like,
oh yeah, I know.
And he would, like, literally almost create fights.
Yeah,
that we had to get security. Right now.
Little afro hair color. Yeah. Yeah,
we had to get security over to him, like, every day. So,
and we had to see him every day, and we knew where he was staying every day.
Yeah,
because that was a very lively scene behind turn two.
Yeah,
when we were doing trash that night and then the next morning.
Yeah,
which I obviously we always talk about trash. It was you and I doing all the trash with a little lawnmower carrying a trailer.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, it was scary to go back and turn to.
That was really funny. Geez. I had an old school lawnmower in a trailer, and I'm just bebopping down
I'm just standing on the back of it, and they're like, "Oh, what are you guys doing? Don't talk to us. We're scared of you."
So one of my favorite stories about the fair, though, is so G, who has unfortunately passed away.
Yeah, Stormfront. We didn't talk about him.
Yeah, and Jimmy. Jimmy. They worked for Stormfront, who did all of the production stuff. They handled all the sound and lights for the tents. You know, anything we did, they were there for all that.
But fortunately, that's a relationship that carries on to today.
Yeah.
Because the big tent that we had for November, the tires you were working in, never had to worry about getting wet or anything. They provided that tent.
Yep.
That's good.
Yeah, so, but my favorite story is coming around the corner, just busting my ass for whatever is going on right now. And I come around the corner, and these two guys are in the back corner, and they got an old Oldsmobile, and it's like just right off the right. And the one guy, G, who passed away, he was in the business of selling.
Mm-hmm.
And that crowd that was the carny world were into buying.
Yep.
But I come around the corner, and Owen has got his hands behind his head, and he's on the window, on the hood of the car. He's got both feet on the hood, and he's got them crossed, and he's got his hands behind his back. I said, "What in the? What are you? Get over here!"
Pimpin' ain't easy, Steve. Pimpin' ain't easy.
And back then, so that was 2016. So what is it? So he was 9. Like, I mean, jeez. I was like, all right, get on this golf cart.
Yeah.
Because back there, I'm telling you,
well, it was bad. I mean, even on our normal events before the fair even came in, I think they called it what, safety meetings they were doing. Like, oh, yeah. Geez. We have no idea.
Yeah. But you
want alcohol? We're up your alley.
Oh, yeah. But you want to talk about that turn two, like the carny world? Yikes. They have 53-foot trailers, and they have like 10 doors on it, and yep. It's like a little cubby that they sleep in, and it is just, it's a lot like Oakland back in the day, where it's like dogs barking.
It was a scary area.
Yeah. So you did not want to go back there at night.
Nope. Or any time at that call.
Well, any time, yeah. But, man, I've lost track of time now. 2016, we're still
first
in.
First fair. Yep. Which you missed the first couple of days because you were sick.
Oh, that worst like I said, I've ever been.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah, worst I've ever been.
We're all about getting this to happen. He's going to miss the first couple of days.
Yeah, I was like, you got it from here. Yeah. It's kind of like what's happening now.
Seems like it. Very reminiscent.
But no, yeah, so I thought the fair, I mean, and I know it went well because after that it just
it was snowballed. A staple.
Yeah, yeah, it just became a thing. And they kept bringing in, they brought in a ride that stayed for a while, remember, at that time? That one they brought from Italy, and it never worked.
Oh, yeah, the first year they engineered from Germany or Italy.
Yeah,
wherever,
they brought it.
Work on it the
didn't
whole
even,
time.
Didn't even work.
But we brought in Big Rigs, the Bandit series.
Yeah, we brought the Bandit series. That turned out good.
The AMA Supercross, that was one and done. Thank yeah. good. Goodness.
We tried the racing. That didn't even.
Free admission. Free admission. Said, like, just come in and watch racing.
Still didn't work. That's still a today problem.
We did meet and greets out front. Remember, yeah. We brought the driver's
seat. Yeah, Throckmorton was out there doing his thing. And, but yeah, no, getting fans has been a problem.
I mean, we even worked with Legends because Travis was racing and he was working with Legends.
He
was
dressed up as Elvis. Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
Burning rubber.
We got to get him on because he did a racing experience and that's by far the greatest person I've ever coached as a driver in the racing experience. Because he was just talking nonstop. And, I mean, he was good. I mean, he knew what he was doing, but he went in turn one time, and I knew he was the Elvis impersonator because I'm a huge fan of Elvis. And he said, "Hey, man, I just want to tell you there's a huge chunk of burning rubber down here in turn one." Like, dude, did you say burning rubber? Like, chunk of burning rubber? I can't take you seriously now.
So Brian takes Elvis's birthday off. That's his
January 8th.
Done it since school.
Yep.
And then my dad, who, for those that have paid attention or have met my father, could care less about anyone in this world. But when it comes to Travis Powell,
you take him to Legends.
You take him to Legends. He is standing O in the front row, hammer drunk. No, he's not hammer drunk, but he's in the front row. He's like,
don't even talk to him.
Yeah.
Like,
just, I'm looking.
Shut up. I'm watching.
This is magic. This is magic happening with Travis Powell.
Can't even control his laughter. He just,
I will say Travis's, biggest thing he did was like team wise, you would have thought a cup. Team was there,
uniforms.
They were always on point. The car was ready. Like the team had their own crew uniform. And he's running a Charger at Myrtle Beach.
Yeah,
like,
we're venturing off. We're gonna get Travis Powell on here. Oh, yeah. Back to Myrtle Beach. We're not hating, but you know what I mean.
We are hating, essentially. Like I said, you can see that
2016 fair first year. Yep. Nopey's still going on Nopey's strong. Going, yep. I mean, Nopey's probably our two biggest events we have.
Yep. And 16, I mean, racing was still getting better. Like, we got through the Howard stuff.
Well, I'll tell you a little story about 2016 as far as a racer. That's the first year I drove for anybody outside of my granddad, Richard Burgess, which was a very good car. He was running for Rookie of the Year that year.
That's right.
Yep. And a black number 30 Strand Termite Pest Control car. And Richard had, like, a back issue or whatnot. He asked me to hop in it one day, and I said, sure, I'll hop in it. And we were pretty fast. Yarborough in the 20 car, which everybody knows. Yarborough in the 20 car was like unbeatable at Myrtle Beach Speedway. And we second on the charts in practice. And Richard said, you know what? Just go ahead and just race that car. He said, but who does the points? And I think it was still Hennessy at the point at the time. He said, but can I just get into 55? Does he know better? I said, I don't think he pays that much attention. And I said, but I mean, we can try it. Whatever. So Richard started at 55, and I ran a 30. And I mean, I love Richard to death. I mean, what he did for me goes above and beyond. But a 30 went from running 15th, 16th to battling for the win. But yeah, that started a relationship with Richard Burgess and Tammy Burgess, his wife, and Buster Dallas from Strand Termite. That really, I thought, put my name on the map. Maybe I do have talent. And you know, we always battled that with Granddad, and I just never having the equipment to contend. But we got some wins in 2016, and which will lead us to 2017, which could have been our year, but it was not.
Yeah. Oh, shoot. So 2017 comes rolling around, and the fair is now just a thing. So we're now trying to learn and get better from it.
You know, what concerts to book?
What specials to have?
I think Big Rigs were second year, not AMA Supercross.
Yeah, no. But I want to. Can't remember which year we did the racing. But anyways, so 2017 rolls around. Just continuing to try to grow. When did we do Beach Madness?
That is good. Because we put the banner behind the grandstands with everybody that was involved. That,
my favorite banner, by the way.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that.
Well, I got yelled at for that, too.
What's that?
For the banner. Because we wanted the banner up there for the year. Right?
Right.
In the place right across the street in that little plaza, I remember getting heavy duty zip ties. And I was putting the banner up. I said, this is going to be up all year long. And one day, Mr. Lutz was beside me up there. He said, what are you doing? I said, I'm just going to put up this banner. He said, well, I want to tell you about something. It was like something Charlotte related. And he's like, you using them zip ties? I'm like, yeah. I said, this banner will be up all year long. If that's okay, that's cool. He said, but do you know there's much cheaper zip ties? I'm like, but the wind's pretty bad here. Like, we want it to be up all year long. He said, just use the cheaper zip ties. So at that point, I stopped using the heavy duty zip ties and used cheaper zip ties. The very next week, half the zip ties were blown off. So probably would have made more sense to use the heavy duty zip ties.
I will say it was a pretty cool banner, though.
It's a very cool banner.
Like the way it turned out. So 2000, where did we go there?
2017. We're going to 17.
Yeah, so 17 rolls in. Fair is the fair. Nopey's is just killing it.
Still
at this
crazy.
Point.
The first year was first couple was just one event. Which now one? We're like two events.
Which one was the one? No, so it was later. It was closer to 2020 when there was like the shooting at that bingo place off of 501 on the right-hand side.
Oh, yeah.
Remember? Right. There was a shooting.
That was later,
And then it was on the loose. And then we had the girls out there collecting money, and we had to try to keep an eye on them to make
sure. I do think 2017, which street legal we already had, but I think we brought Laps into the equation, the mascot.
Laps,
yeah.
That was so I
actually, telling me there's so much we've done.
Yeah, so Laps was a character that I came up with trying to get a mascot to come in, and I found it online. It was just a surfer dude's head. And then we took one of our driving experience suits, and I put board shorts on them, and then just had them go around. And we got some good people, because getting a mascot is all about the person inside it.
Yeah, Caleb. That had to be before 2017.
Caleb was a rapper.
Because we were at Pelicans game with Laps and whatnot.
Yep.
Had to be before that. Caleb was a good man.
Yeah, Jill had that one friend that was pretty good, too.
Oh, yeah.
But so like I said, getting Laps, we had – in. His real name was 1-800-LAPS, but his friends called him Laps.
That's right.
So
yeah, makes sense.
Yep. So we had the mascot. We were trying to just we were grasping at straws, man. Like yeah. Anything
we're
searching, we could do,
we're searching.
Anything we could do to try to make racing better. We're doing it now. We just learned. We've become a little bit more educated on how far to stretch, because we pushed the envelopes at Myrtle Beach Speedway for so long.
But I feel like you and I, we got to the point where we had to justify being there, but I don't know why we had to justify being there, because we were on salary, working every single day of the week, every hour.
Literally every day.
We were still doing racing experience throughout the course of all this. And we were just trying to make every aspect of the job better than what it was.
Right. Yeah. Yep. And so, so we had Laps 2017, had the fair, but that was the year that lives in infamy for you, when we finally got our chance to shine a light on what we were trying to do as far as growing car count.
Yep, because car count got better.
Car count was good.
Unfortunately, it brought a juggernaut of late models
to
Myrtle Beach Speedway.
Yep, so Lee Pulliam shows up.
Yeah.
Brian has his best year of his career.
2016, we ended on a good term. Like, we qualified six, I believe.
What was your last time in the 55, the white 55? When you went?
2016. Yeah. So I made the transition with Burgess that same year, I believe it was. And then we battled with Tommy Lemons in 2016 400. Like, we were battling for the lead, and we broke an axle just before, or was it just before or just after halfway break? And then Tommy went on to blow up in the very same race. And that was the same year, I believe, that Christian Eckes put Josh Berry in the wall to win the race. It was Junior Motorsports car racing for the win.
You want to talk about, and he said it, and I think he did an interview with Dale about it, that like the angriest he's ever been was that day.
Yeah.
And when I saw him the next day, because he was, at that time, he was collecting the checks for both, like, for Junior Motorsports. Nice. So he came in, him and his wife came in with, like, Josh was still towing the trailer. Josh came in. And he could care less about having a conversation.
Well, I could say what's more frustrating was I was in the bathroom, like, using it, and then Tommy just comes in, and he's like, weren't we just battling for the win, and they're still racing? I said, yeah, I think we were, because he blew up, and, you know, I broke the axle, so we were already out to race. Right. And the fact that they were still going on, it was, like, very heartbreaking for both of us.
Of course. Was that the split decision car?
I think his was all black there at that point, I think.
Oh, yeah, with the yellow.
I think I had a red number. Yeah.
Yeah, I can picture it.
Yep.
So 2017.
2017 comes out, and I mean, my mentality is like Tommy's the guy to beat, obviously, because that's who I was battling. I thought him and I had the best car in 2016, and I was racing him. And he had a teammate, Justin Johnson, he brought to the icebreaker. And Justin was dictating the race. And I went up beside Justin. I was just pinching him down. I mean, me and Justin ran side by side, I would say. It was a 125-lap race for 70 laps, if not more. And then when Tommy came up, I was like, okay, this is who I know I got to beat. And I was trying to pinch Justin down the whole time so Tommy couldn't make the move. And I said, he's not going to dump Justin. Well, little did I know that Lee Pulliam is going to come into the equation. And he saved tires much better than all of us did. And I just did not have him on my radar. I just thought Tommy would be the car to beat. And it, in my opinion, it was the greatest race that I ever raced in. I know it had to be entertaining for the fans. I know a lot of people that watched that race and said, oh, I mean, that's one for the ages. I mean, we are four wide, five wide. I mean, Mike Neff is going to be coming back on board this week. He's like, everybody's touching everybody. Like, it was just a good race. And that's the same time we were doing the HCC Connect with Alan Smothers, and he was lost for words. He couldn't say anything. And long story short, Pulliam got us there with, I think, like eight laps to go, and we finished second to him. But I was, like, was pinching Justin and Tommy down. So when Pulliam made his moves and crushed the crush panel, like he said, and got free, like, I could run with him. So I did leave everybody else. I thought I saved enough tire, but Pulliam was just that much better than everybody else, and he won the race. And I thought it was a one-off deal, and me and Richard and my dad and all, we were pretty excited about the year. Well, Pulliam went on to run every single race with us that year, mm-hmm. and won the national championship. We finished second to him, I think, 9 or 10 times.
Yeah, and so we'll kind of lead into this break, because I think we're going to end this as part one, because we still got two more or three more years, yeah. Technically.
The somber tones are coming.
Huh?
The somber tones are coming. Yeah.
So what I will say, though, is that so where we're at right now in Florence is that was kind of the start for me personally. That got us to the point where it was a factor in our decision to not go NASCAR sanctioned, because that was the year he won the NASCAR champ, the title.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they also decided to take the banquet from what it used to be, where it was just short track or regional stuff by itself, and then they turned it into Pinty and modifieds and you know, all the extras.
Speeches were quicker.
Yeah, so
much more condensed.
So Pulliam got a 5-minute speech.
Wait, and I would like to think that, like, Trevor Huddleston, which is who he was battling out west, was getting the same criteria he was getting called. But I mean, we got called every week in, week out.
Yeah. So we'll tell another story on the other side, and this will be the beginning of part two for next week. So we're going to end part one for now, because I'm telling you right now, we're not even close to being done, and we've spoke quite a bit. So
the stories will be much deeper for 20, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. So you're definitely going to want to tune in for part two. This works out great for Brian and I. We're going to knock out two shows in one sitting. So that's awesome. But it's a good conversation, I think, right?
Like, so, yeah, well, you tune in next week, and, like, you see our eyes floating, and we're slurring words. Understand, we're filming it all right now.
True story. So thank you for joining us on tap. You've been a part of part one of our 11th episode. So does that make the next one still 12?
11 V2.
V2, okay. Yeah. So then what do we have to do after that for 13?
It's weird.
Yeah,
we'll
13.
We'll figure it out.
But anyways... We appreciate you guys joining us.
13, like the hotel floors.
Oh yeah, you don't want to have 13.
So we'll do 11, 12.
you know what.
If you're on the 14th floor, you know what floor you're on.
You know what floor you're on.
Yeah, that's right.
but we appreciate you joining us for this out of nowhere amazing episode.
Throwback week.
Yeah. We're so thank you for joining us on tap, and we'll see you next week for part two.